Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us for the TFL official podcast. It's been a year now, and over that year, hundreds of thousands of you have tuned in to listen and to find out about your favorite cars and trucks. If you're watching this on YouTube, thank you. If you're one of our Patreons, double thank you. And if you want to listen to it as an audio podcast, feel free to tune in to wherever you get your favorite podcast, including Apple, Spotify, you know the rest. Hey Nathan, can you believe we've been reviewing cars for 10 years now?
Actually longer than that, but 10 years is like a nice chunk of change, right?
It is, yeah. And in this video and podcast, we're going to be talking about the top 10 best and worst cars that we have reviewed since 2001. And actually, to be fair, this is your list. So maybe in a future podcast / video, we'll do my list. But this is your
list. Yeah. Well, your list will look a lot different than mine. Now, bear in mind, guys, we could have done a list saying every year the great car was a Corvette or a Porsche, and every year, you know, whatever. So what we decided to do is sort of mix it up and talk about other cars that are relevant or interesting or different.
And let's face it, cars that we actually got to drive. We didn't get to drive too. That many Porsches.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it is on this list, I believe. Yeah, so we're going to... That's interesting. I actually didn't put it on the list.
Yeah, there you go.
Never mind. But we did drive a 911 that I did follow.
Yeah, and that was one of our worst reviews. If we had worst reviews, remember we put it up against NV, a Nissan NV.
A Nissan NV. We were still experimenting at
the
time.
Yeah, we were trying to figure it out. I think that's why we never got Porsches after that.
No, that's not the reason why, but I know that both Nissan and Porsche were like, eh?
Why are you comparing a 911 to a Nissan NV?
Yeah, we did some interesting stuff. For about 3-4 years when we first started with TFL, we did get Porsches, and then they pulled it not just from us, but from the entire area.
Denver, yeah.
Yeah, so that's why we don't do them as often as we'd like.
All right, but before we get to that list, let's talk about some more fun stuff. We've got the news coming up. We'll go over that. Uh-huh. And we've got the places we're going to review cars next week, because it's a busy week, a lot going on. But first, you just got back from New Orleans. Are you traveling again?
Yeah, I'm traveling again. I got my shots, so did my wife, and so did our friends, so we all went to New Orleans. And I've been to New Orleans before. If you recall, actually, the last time I was there was with you.
Yeah.
It wasn't as fun because Roman's not a great date. But it was for Lexus.
Nathan, just because I would not lift my top for your beads.
Dude, no beads at all, seriously. But when we went there, I didn't go to Bourbon Street. I didn't really see the site. So this time I did. It was great. Nobody seemed to care about the coronavirus at all, especially on Bourbon Street. And I probably have 2 or 3 communicable diseases just by walking past certain people. But it was a really fun trip. I feel energized. This is my first vacation in like 2 years. So I feel great. And I want to go back. I love
it. And you said you ate some alligator?
I ate alligator, like a blackened alligator, fried alligator. There was a skewered one. And the funny part was the day after I ate all this different alligator,
we went. Did you have like alligator nuggets?
Yeah, I did actually. They were fried. And we went on a swamp boat tour, which was great, by the way. And there's all these little baby alligators running around. And I'm thinking, yeah, I kind of feel a little guilty. My wife was none too pleased with me because she didn't want me eating alligator.
So let's go over the news of the week
in case
you missed it. First, you wrote a story, Stellantis to slow-selling brands, improve in the next 10 years or face the guillotine.
That's right. So Stellantis, as you guys know, sort of took in and took over FCA, so all those brands. But the thing is that FCA has had a few losing brands, and one of the main brands that they've had an issue with was Alfa Romeo. They sell those here overseas. There's also DS and Lancia. Those, because we don't get them, I didn't mention that much in the article. But anyway, they're giving them 10 years. 10 years!
I bet you it's less. I bet you that was a shot across the bow.
Well, yeah, but they're still going to finance them. They're going to fund them still. They're going to allow their future development. They want to electrify.
Well, they're not going to say we're killing these brands because that would just kill the.
Well,
they would like prematurely stick the.
They've already chopped up SRT like the minute they walked in there, and they definitely have their eyes set on certain other brands. But specifically, Alfa Romeo, you've got 10 years, Alfa Romeo, to improve your sales. Or you go away. And you know what, honestly? I hope they do because I really, really like Alfa Romeo. I mean, I know they're not reliable, but the cars are gorgeous and so much fun.
Here's a new story near and dear to all of our hearts. Mitsubishi says they're bringing back the rally art.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be cool? For a long time, they actually made rally cars.
It's funny you mentioned that because Moto Man makes fun of me weekly about Mitsubishi. Don't get too happy, guys. So you're not going to see a rally art version of the Outlander anytime soon. What they did was overseas, they have a pickup truck, and they're making a rally art version of it, which means they're probably going to jazz it up with some cool amenities, maybe a performance upgrade, but I doubt it, and that's about it. They're just bringing the name back, and that's overseas. That's not for here.
What happened? You know, once upon a time, Nathan, you know, you used to have, like, let's take BMW, because they were one of the first, right?
Yeah.
So you had BMW, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they created the M brand, which was their motorsport brand.
Yeah, yeah, and, the M1 and all that.
And when they stuck an M on a car, right, it was serious. You saw it coming down the road, and you're like, damn, that is a serious car.
Even today, M cars, real M1s,
right.
not the M styling.
And then somewhere in the last 10 years, not just Mitsubishi, but all the manufacturers decided, forget all the performance bits. Let's just stick all the cosmetic stuff on there. You know,
right.
It's like they put the cart before the horse. So now you've got, you know, Audi with S, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, M styling cues. You've got the N from Hyundai.
AMG
right.
kit. That's not the real AMG.
Yeah, come on. You know, I mean, look, true performance and true sales, more importantly, come from actually having the kit on the car that makes it go fast around a corner and stop quickly and accelerate quickly. Don't just slap the arrow and the badging and, you know, everything but the stuff that actually makes it go fast and expect people, or at least enthusiasts like us, to have respect for that thing.
Uh-huh.
I mean, come on, Mitsubishi. Build a rally car and then build the brand around that. Don't create, you know, an old rally art logo and slap it on your Outlander and call it sporty.
They're not going to even put it on there. It's on a pickup truck overseas. Here's the one thing that you forgot to mention. See, the reason why this is such a popular thing is because they make a ton of money, especially the Germans, when they add all this extra stuff to a car. A lot of people aren't into being enthusiasts.
It's like, you know, death by a million cuts.
I know. You and I both agree that it's ridiculous when we see a car that, oh my God, that's a great M3. Oh, it's not an M3. You know, stuff like that. It really is kind of difficult to see and to digest, but A lot of posers out there, they love it.
And they create a lot of brand confusion. I think Mercedes is doing that with the 53 and the 63,
oh,
right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Right? I mean, now we're talking about actually more powerful engines, but there's two variants of it,
mm-hmm.
right? There's AMG. The 53, and then the 63, and it's so confusing, so confusing to most people out there. All right, so that's my soapbox. I'll get off of it. Now, Porsche is saying that the next Macan, or is it Macan? I never know, is officially moving forward, except it's going to be a EV.
Yeah, in fact,
there's a big step.
It's a big step. Porsche said they were going to electrify and also do more hybrids, so we're going to see a lot more of that in the future. But this particular Macan has actually been seen on the road, driving around. I think it went to the Nürburgring recently, or it will. That was the report that I heard. So they're really serious about making this thing, you know, electric and going all EV. The funny thing is, Porsche has also been experimenting with biofuels. And there's
right,
but so it's interesting that they're working on both sides of the pole. But remember that Porsche is connected.
That's the promise that, you know, that's once again, there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? We're gonna create a fuel that doesn't pollute or doesn't use carbon or is carbon. Yeah, right. I'll believe it, you know, when you and I are long dead and actually that technology exists, when you can turn like energy into fuel without paying a cost.
Without any major, there's always, you know, there's one effect that has to be created by
the big news about the Macan or Macan is that it's going to have more range than the Taycan.
Yeah.
Right, they're saying it's going to have more electric range. So we're looking probably
because it's not a performance vehicle like the Taycan.
We're looking at about 300 miles. And, you know, keep in mind that the European loop is much more, I don't know, what would you say?
Simple.
I don't know if it's simple.
It's just simple.
It rewards a lot more. And so the European loop is always much higher, the EV loop, than the American loop. So I think our loop is much more realistic, and I think Europe is changing. So there is an electric one coming. And let's talk about the programs that we're going on, because these are stories that we'll be filing this week. So where are you going?
I'm going to go to California and drive the Volkswagen Taos.
The new Taos?
Yes, named after Taos, New Mexico. Now, I can't tell you much about it. There is an embargo that lifts on the 26th, so it's going to be a little while before you guys actually can hear about all the technical features, but this is our first chance to get our hands on this little tiny crossover. And I can say this, it is unique for Volkswagen, and it is related to the Taro, I believe is what it's called in China.
Yeah. So it's the one that slots underneath the Tiguan.
That's right. This will be their entry-level crossover.
So it's Taos, Tiguan, what's the top of the line one?
Atlas.
So now they're going to have three crossovers.
And technically four because the Atlas Cross or whatever.
With the hatchback.
But the whole thing here is that Volkswagen's been selling more crossovers by far than sedans or anything else. And in a way, this car kind of takes the place of the Volkswagen Golf that's going bye-bye in the United States, which is sad.
We've got some news here that I'm actually following up on. So the news is that the new Pathfinder has gone into production, and I'm actually going with Tommy to Missoula, Montana to drive it. So we'll have a first drive, or at least a first hands-on impression of that thing.
I'm excited about that because they're finally moving to a conventional transmission with that vehicle. It's been like 5 or 6 years since they went CVT. Now they're going to a 9-speed automatic. I'm very happy about that.
And then at the end of the week, like you, I'm flying to LA for one day to go see the Ioniq, the new Ioniq.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not going to be driving it, but I'll, you know, see it behind. It's already been unveiled in Europe, so a little of the limelight has come off because it's not a world premiere.
Right.
But it will be our first chance to actually get our hands on it here in America.
That's great. Now, these new press events that we're going to are a little different than the old ones, because what they're doing is they're basically just dropping us in the car, which personally I prefer. I think you do as well.
Yep.
And they're trying to still socially distance us as much as possible. So they drag us in, they drop us into the car, have us drive a route. We get a chance to shoot a little bit of video or do photos. And then we're done. We hit the plane and come back home. All of the in-person stuff has been sort of eliminated, and it's done online now, which honestly I kind of prefer.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes life a little bit easier. We spend less time basically socializing, but that's okay, and more time actually.
I'm not a social person anyway, and the best part is Roman's going to be out of town pretty much the whole week, so we're hiring dancers, and there will be cakes.
Okay.
Sorry, but you know, I've been asking for a fire pole for 11 years, and I'm finally going to install one when he's gone. I wish.
Yeah, and then the other bit of news that's coming out is Paul went on the TLX Type S drive, which was at Laguna Seca. Paul, of course, is our race car driver.
Yeah.
And he did a video basically with the driving impressions embargo. On the 20th, it's going to drop. So we're going to have an actual review of the thing. So if you're a big Acura TLX Type S fan, Paul's review of that is coming up. And he's a stick from Top Gear USA. So when he takes it around Laguna Seca, we're going to learn something. I just saw him today. He was complaining that they didn't let him go fast. I figured that. He's used to like race car drivers, like where they give him the keys and just go at it. I think it was a lead follow thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, lead follow with Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, God. He must have been chewing on the steering
wheel. He must have been trying to like.
Oh, my God. Paul is one of the most gifted. Not only he's a remarkably gifted race car driver, he's been taking on Pike's Peak for years and years.
Yeah.
And he has almost perfect hair. So, like Roman, I don't know where they go for the toupees.
Do you like the Grand Tour?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's actually doing some of the stunt driving for that as well.
He did, like, the very first episode.
He did. Like, we can't go into it yet because he's still, you know, Top Gear has a contract, so we can't really go into it. But he was in that as well. So
Yeah. But we can't say anything else about Paul being
except he did some of the stunt driving in Detroit. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's it. That's
if
all
you remember what happened in Detroit, which is pretty badass, actually. All right, let's go at it, dude. Let's start with 2011, and we'll talk about the best cars, and then we'll talk about the worst car that we reviewed, at least your list.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason we're doing this is because, obviously, used car prices are through the roof right now, but if you're looking for really good used cars, and maybe if you go far enough back, you can actually get them at a reasonable price.
Right, or certain cars you might want to consider avoiding, which is why we have a good and bad list. Now, bear in mind, just once again to remind you guys, we're doing the best and the worst that we've driven in those years. And in some cases, it has to do with the video itself. And that's, if you are watching our video right now, behind me, you're going to see the 2011 Subaru Forester XT, it's a turbo, and the Toyota RAV4 with the V6, which we believe is one of the best RAV4s ever made. That thing was a rocket. Both of these vehicles were fantastic, and that's going to start our list.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about the RAV4. Like you said, it was a rocket, but it was also, you know, that generation of RAV4, and my stepfather has one, was just really solid, right? That was
when
Toyota was less concerned about, I mean, the RAV4 now is, you
it's pretty good still.
It's good. It's very good, but it's also kind of flashy and expensive, and, you know, it's really moved up in market. This was just a solid, you know, mid-sized crossover, and for some reason, I don't know why, Toyota stuffed a massively powerful V6 in it and made it. We were at the racetrack. Remember, we were at the racetrack.
Oh yeah. Tell them the story.
So we went to our local racetrack. This is the it's like an eighth of an oval. It's an oval. It's like an eighth, right?
Yeah, it's a really tiny oval.
It's a tiny oval, and they do this thing where you go and race other cars around the oval.
Yeah.
And you know, the fastest car ends up winning. I don't know, a stuffed giant panda. I don't know what they win. They win something.
They have to go do one lap for so dead stop, one lap, and then stop. And they have to stop at the line, I believe, when they do the lap.
And this RAV4 just ruled every car. There were BMW. I remember it just killed an Audi A4.
Yep.
Cars you would think would be much quicker.
Yeah, and that it was stopped too, by the way.
Yeah, that was that 2 liter turbo. We're at a mile above, you know, sea level. You think of that 2 liter turbo A4 would kill it. No, it just killed everything.
That V6 is just a beast. But that Subaru we drove, this is pre-CVT, 2011, had a turbo engine in it. So they were sort of on equal footing.
XT.
Yeah, XT.
XT, yeah.
Yeah, all the XTs. I think even now.
It had that hood scoop.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at it right now.
It's a good looking.
It's a better looking Forester than the current one.
By far.
The current one has become a commodity, right? So Subaru, back then, was still like taking their rally tradition seriously.
Yep.
And they were actually building on it and trying to engineer cars that were not just, you know, popular, but were also kind of enthusiast-based. I think in a lot of ways, Subaru has kind of gone away from that. They still have the WRX, and they still have the STI, but the rest of it has kind of gone more toward popularity and less
Like a Camry, basically.
Yeah, like a Camry, which makes sense, because that's
cookie where... Cookie cutter, and you know, we understand the return on investment and what needs to be done, but I really did like this Forester. So both of these vehicles, Roman and I really liked, and what we did with them, these vehicles went off-road at a place that we used to use for our off-road testing. And that video is actually, it's pretty popular, like 1.4 million or something like that. So that's out there. And so we loved both those vehicles. But I want to move to a vehicle that both
of us... I thought you were going to say, if you want to see Roman with a mustache.
Yeah, those were the days. It's interesting stuff because we can actually trace facial hair with both Roman and Andre going all the way back to 2010. Actually, earlier, he had a Mike Dicta mustache going on. That was pretty impressive stuff.
People said I looked like Mike Dicta.
You did indeed.
Which was not a compliment.
Well, the best part is, you know, you basically grew up in Chicago, so I think it's a compliment.
The Bears.
The Bears.
All right, so what's the worst car that we drove? Do you think we drove?
Volkswagen Routon.
Yeah, what the heck was that? God. A rebadged Chrysler Town and Country minivan.
It was more expensive in most markets to buy this thing, and there was no real difference. It just had
which was crazy because like Volkswagen is the quintessential van, right? They came here with the van.
They started the minivan, basically. Yeah. And they had, you know, the Eurovan and a bunch of these other vans were great. And all of a sudden, they're using this.
The Westphalian, you know, the camper
version. Right, right.
And all of a sudden, they're like, you know what? Let's not sell any of that in America. Instead, let's take a town and country, stick a Volkswagen nose on it, and call
and
it done.
And call it just a name that a lot of people like, oh, Rotund. You know, they had a hard time. It was just not complimentary.
And even like the badge engineering was just really badly done. You know, it wasn't like they actually, you know, tuned it to make it like Autobahn ready or gave it a different powertrain.
Like
they just stuck a different nose on it and a different badge on the
back. Slightly different tail.
And called it done.
Yeah, I was kind of embarrassed for them, and I had a really hard time doing any review on that vehicle. Let's move to 2012.
All right, the good car. Oh, this was quite the gem, the Audi R8. Not the current generation, the first gen.
The first gen, and we had one with a manual transmission.
We had two of them. We had the 10-cylinder and the 8.
Right, and I actually kind of prefer the 8, but that's a whole different video. It was a manual transmission, and I think you and I both agree, maybe the best manual ever made.
Yeah, it had, that
gated.
Gated, and it was like, you know, there's that cliche, right? It's like a rifle.
Bolt action.
And that's what, it was a click, click, click. It was just fabulous.
Rewarding to shift.
Yeah, and it was really cool because, now I think in some ways, like, the buzz has come off the R8 because it's been around a while.
Yeah.
But back then, this idea of, like, a supercar that was all-wheel drive that had the reliability and the dealer network of Audi was mind-blowing, right?
Because it was comfortable, too.
Because before, I mean, your choices were Lamborghini, right?
Right.
It's basically a rebadged Lamborghini.
Yeah, they
they shared a lot of components.
Underpins.
I mean, that 10-cylinder was a Lamborghini engine.
Basically, yeah.
But you know, Lamborghini doesn't have dealerships everywhere. Nope. They don't have the reputation of Audi. And it was a phenomenal vehicle. And then they had that, like, weird and I think kind of cool blade, right, that went down
the side
from the C-pillar.
It was I thought it was just gorgeous. It's still my favorite Audi by far. And the thing is that we could add, this whole list could easily be nothing but sports cars in terms of what we love, and there are quite a few of them here. But the reason we mentioned the R8 is because it really was our first time to get our hands on it, and it mesmerized us. And before then, we've driven Porsches, which were great and everything, but that R8 was special.
Yeah, and, you know, they're becoming affordable now, right?
A little bit more, yeah.
Yeah, so that was, I want to say it was like 100, and it was also like $150,000 car. Now R8s are like almost 200, but back then they were like 150, and now you can get those things probably for like in the 70s, maybe even 60s.
Right, and the V8 version was actually quite the vehicle. It was very comfortable.
You lost your picture there.
I know, and I hope this is, let's see if this works.
It doesn't matter. It's fine. Saw it.
There it goes.
There you go. You're
back.
It was comfortable. It was a little tight.
I thought it was really comfortable. The seats are great.
And now the thing about that car is, like it is, you know, it was cutting edge tech back then in terms of styling, and now you look at it, it feels a little dated. The screen feels a little small.
Okay,
the controls feel a little like, you know, like last decade, but which they are. But nevertheless, it's a supercar bargain. You know, it's all aluminum, so it's hopefully going to hold up better.
Yeah, and it has a lot of carbon fiber added. And the car itself was just a marvel of engine. Back when Audi was doing some really special stuff, so that's for me. That was just an absolutely amazing car, but let's move on to another vehicle.
Yeah, the worst car that we drove, according
to
you.
Remember, this is now 2012.
Yeah, what could go wrong? Toyota partners with Tesla, puts
Tesla. Oh, no, you're looking.
Oh, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah, so we've actually got two Jeeps coming up. So the worst and the best, all right? So we've kind of bookended them. The worst, of course, was, the Jeep Liberty, dude. I don't know. I think that was just, you know, let's throw a Jeep out there, make it affordable. I guess the diesel, there was a diesel version of that, right?
Yes, there was a CRD version
of it. That was kind of interesting. But, you know, and it was style-wise, it was kind of interesting. I remember we went, for my mother, we actually cross-shopped it with the RAV4, ended up getting the RAV4 for Ivan.
I'm really happy you did because you got a better vehicle than the Jeep Liberty, for those of you who may have forgotten. In 2012, that was after it had a facelift, and I hated that facelift. It looked like a Dodge Nitro, which is another vehicle that I despise, but it's not on this list. The Jeep Liberty had front engine rear drive, standard Jeep setup. This is before they started really hitting hard with their crossover-based, car-based vehicles, which are now all over the place. The Jeep Liberty was supposed to be the everyman Jeep, and unfortunately, it wasn't that easy to modify, which people love to do to Jeeps. And it was okay off-road, but it really wasn't any better than anything else out there, and it certainly wasn't as good as its brethren.
I kind of felt like that was just like, hey, let's, you know, Jeep is becoming a hot brand. People love the Wrangler, so let's take some of that spotlight that's on the Wrangler and turn it into cash.
Oh, there's a real story behind it, actually, and as that's out there on the internet, among other things, and that is the fact that when the Cherokee went away, this was supposed to be the replacement, and it really wasn't, and a lot of people regretted building it, and people were popping corks of champagne when it went away. Because it was just, even though it sold very well, at first it sold extremely well, it just wasn't...
Well, there were other issues with it. It was tight, yeah. Right? There was just no room. I remember sitting in the back seat thinking to myself, oh my God, this thing is just...
You would think there would be room in this thing that's so tall and you know, but no, actually the crossovers that came out later on had more
usable
space. And then
you'd open up the space behind the rear seat and you'd be lucky to get like a box of Kleenex back there.
It just, the whole thing was just unusually
designed.
The
ergonomics and the packaging, and let's face it, the switchgear was not the most expensive, I'm being kind here.
Daimler was in business at that time, but this was a Daimler design, and they were like, just make it cheap.
And it was okay off-road. I mean,
it was okay.
But
there was so many other vehicles that could outperform it. But I want to move on.
And the one that can outperform it is the next one, right?
Yes.
In 2013.
Now, these were special models because they finally got rid of the Boat Anchor V6.
And they put the Pentastar in. So we're talking about the new, well, it wasn't new, it was the JK at that time. So what Jeep did was they first upgraded, I think it was a 3.8. Wasn't that the original one or 3.6?
3.6 or 3.8, whatever it was.
I think it was a 3.8. And then they actually went to the Pentastar, which was, let's be fair, it's in every product. But it's a good engine. I think it's going to be one of the best engines.
Yeah, it's won a lot of awards for good reasons. They're actually pretty damn reliable. I've looked that up, and plus I know somebody who has a 2014 Wrangler.
So they upgraded the engine, and then a few years later they did the interior.
Right.
Right before they went to the JL. So now we're talking about the JK model. It was it brought it into the 20th century.
It woke it up.
Yeah.
I think it's the best way to put it. Just the year before, I had to drive one of those with the old engine from here to Easter Jeep Safari in Moab, Utah.
And it's funny, people love that old engine. I couldn't stand it.
I couldn't stand it.
You look at it, it looks like something from 1960, which it is probably.
Well, no, it's a minivan engine. The previous V6 was a minivan engine, basically, and it really was. And on top of that, it just wasn't very efficient, and it just didn't have a lot of torque, and it just was loud. Everything about it was... made better,
which is weird because for a long time they had that straight 6.4 liter, and that's not the one we're talking about.
We're talking about the V6 that replaced
that engine. Was exceptional. That was, I think, one of the
but it wasn't very efficient, which is one of the reasons they got rid of it.
Top 10 engines of all time for Americans.
You
can make that argument.
The Wrangler, with when it got the Pentastar, was just woken up, and Roman and I absolutely agree, and the videos are out there. It made it so much better in every measurable way. But we want to move on to a vehicle that wasn't made better.
The story behind this one is like Akio Toyoda, the CEO of Toyota, got together with Elon Musk and said, hey, can we somehow do a partnership? And Musk said, yes, we'll sell you the drive unit and batteries from our, at that time, Model S, and you can stick it into a Toyota RAV4 EV. Let me cut to the chase. It became the least reliable Toyota of all time.
We drove it. We drove one just a little bit in the desert, and there was nothing about it that really got us going. It was
front-wheel drive to begin with.
Yeah, there was no all-wheel drive variant. It really wasn't that fast, and they basically took everything that Toyota did right and made it wrong. It was a poor choice by both Toyota and Tesla, for that matter, to build this vehicle.
I think Tesla just tried to bilk Toyota out of a lot of money, because I heard that they charged so much that they actually lost money.
Oh, they lost a lot of money.
On every single
and they never made the production numbers that they initially wanted to, which is rare for Toyota. Toyota hits their marks every time. And this was one of many.
I just saw one on Craigslist. I want to say it was like $13,000.
Yeah, they're nuts. They've been smoking whatever Elon's been smoking. The whole thing about this EV is the way they put it is that Toyota has very few failures. There are a few. This was one of them.
And remember, it's not the first EV RAV4. There was one before it.
Yep.
Which they did themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the one we're talking about. We're talking about the last one that they
did.
Which
had the battery tech and the drive tech from Tesla.
Tesla, yeah. And you'd think that'd be, like peanut butter and jelly, but it turned out not to be very good. And actually, I think part of the problem was when we drove it, we also didn't have it's a whole other story. So we drove it, and there at that time, what Toyota did, might as well talk about this.
Yeah, sure, why not?
What Toyota did was they used to have like regional rep representation for media. And so our rep was out of Phoenix. And, you know, Pete Walker was a great guy. We got to know him really well.
Yeah,
the Walker
agency. Yeah, that agency was excellent. Walker.
Walker. And they basically, you know, represented Toyota. And we would get loan reviews from them. And then when he news broke, they would send us press releases. And Toyota decided to bring all that in-house and outsource it to a, I think it was a PR company.
A couple different ones, but one main one
in particular,
for one district.
That apparently had, at that time, had no or very, I think it was no actually.
They did sports drinks.
And makeup,
yeah.
An ad agency and a PR agency that had no experience with cars.
Oh man, it was such a poor choice.
Yeah.
We were, you know, one of the first things they did to us was they sent us an email saying, we want to know what you're going to be saying about our car before we give you our car. Remember that?
We got those emails.
It was ridiculous.
And if you recall, you know, one of the things we like to say is we're independent and honest. And so, you know, what we're going to do with your car is we're going to review it.
Yeah. And that's our reply. And they'd be a little like, what?
They're basically asking for editorial control.
Yeah. Right? And they really pushed it at first. So then they moved on. We'll try to make the long story shorter. They started like having their reps sit with us when we were trying to do videos and cars at press events. So we went to at the time, the new RAV4, which is the previous generation RAV4. And we had like two reps hanging out with us when we were trying to do videos in these cars. So you know what Roman and I did?
We left them at the side of the road because we couldn't put them in the film. You can't have in the video, you can't have somebody sitting there like over your shoulder like looking at what you're doing.
Not only that, but one of them was kind of glowering. She was displeased. So we basically said, listen, we need you guys to not be in this video or else we can't do a video. Please step out of the vehicle. We're going to drive back and forth and then we'll come back and pick you up. And we took our time.
I mean, yeah, and imagine, let's say, you can put yourself in this situation. You're trying to do an honest and independent review, and the manufacturer rep is sitting there listening and watching. And
in your review itself.
Help. Yeah, it just makes no sense. You can't do that, you know?
Yeah, and it was a little iffy. So
anyway, since then, Toyota,
they changed their whole thing
and figured it out. And,
yeah, you know, they ejected that whole thing, and they made it much... Actually, it's probably, they're one of the easier people, organizations
to deal
with.
They went back to in-house.
And, yeah, which, yeah. Thank goodness for that.
All right, I think we beat that one to death.
Yeah, we beat it to death. So let's move on to 2014.
The Nissan GTR.
That was the first time we got a chance to drive the GTR on
that was
video.
When it was still affordable.
Yeah, it was before they went crazy, but the 2014 was kind of special because they made some adjustments, which made it a much easier car to drive. Now, I drove it a year before that in Long Beach, and I nearly tore my face off, and the electronics went haywire. It was really, the launch control screwed up. This one, totally different. This one was a miracle, and Roman and I were both astounded by it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was when Godzilla was Godzilla. That was the first time that the GTR had actually come to America.
Uh-huh.
You know, the real version of that.
Right.
And not the, you know, the and then, I mean, hand-built engine, twin-turbo monster, 0-60, I think I want to say like 3 seconds.
Around that mark. And basically it's the same car we just recently drove again.
Yeah, it is the same car.
<That's> they haven't done much with changing
except increase the price.
A lot. It was an amazing car, and at the time, they absolutely dominated the market. And we don't know exactly why. There's an inside story to why they didn't properly refresh it.
I think it was Carlos.
I think it was Carlos Ghosn. This is not something that we can make a profit on. Well, yeah, actually, maybe you could have.
You could drive traffic to dealerships. Anyway, that's a whole different story.
All right, another Nissan product was our worst that year.
The
QX80, Yeah, the QX80. That's their big SUV, which they're still building.
Right. The Happy Hippo.
Yeah, back then it looked like a hippopotamus. It was really hard to take
it
seriously.
Very popular in Orange County, Nathan.
Yeah, and Beverly Hills, too.
Yeah.
And one of the issues with it is it was giant, but the seats back then, they made them better now, were really uncomfortable for people who were over 6 feet tall. So none of us were very comfortable driving the thing.
I just had the same issue with the Armada.
Yeah.
Same problem. It's the biggest car in the world, and I can't get the seat. I mean, there's like literally 1,800 feet behind me of passenger space, and I can't get the seat far enough back to not hit my knees. And of course, I got long legs.
Yeah,
some
you do.
Too.
They're ridiculous.
But still, come on, you know.
No, but they should still. The big SUV should fit you. And I have an issue with height. I know. The thing is that I like to sit as low as possible in big SUVs and trucks. And I drop the seat down, and I'm still sitting a little too high, and the steering wheel doesn't quite work right. It was worse with the QX80 because the adjustments were less, and it was just
plus the interior felt like it was, you know. old school, and not in a good way. You
but
I mean?
It kind of cheap and chintzy. And I remember our review, we had a really tough time finding positives because it really wasn't an off-roader. We did take it off-road because that's what we do. But it just had all these issues that were going against it, and we just couldn't quite figure it out. So that's why it was
the Nissan has always like shared switchgear, but when you're up to that level, you know, when you're competing against some of the more expensive, you need to, you know, you need to take it up a notch and not have the same switchgear that you would have in that time, like a Versa, right? You don't want to share that.
Yeah, and it didn't make a lot of sense to us that they, for these prices, they couldn't disguise things. They've done a much better job recently, but this is back then, and back then it was just not a great vehicle. But let's move on to 2015, which did have a really good and a really bad vehicle, and they're from the same manufacturer.
Yeah, the WRX, you know, that became like the affordable STI.
I was so impressed with that car, except they, that was when they introduced the CVT in a WRX, and a lot of people were throwing themselves off buildings and you know,
I can't keep it quite straight. They went from like the hatchback, right, and then they went, you went on
yeah, they got rid of the hatchback altogether with the WRX.
And they went to the sedan only, right?
Right, sedan only, but they swore, you know, you get all the utility out of it, and that's why it's
isn't
good.
Isn't that funny, looking back from 2001, that they actually went to a sedan?
It's such a strange thing, and a lot of people are still crying, but if you wanted, you can get a hatchback if you got the STI, which the STI had the old school, still very powerful engine.
With the horrendous turbo lag.
Right. The WRX had a new 2-liter turbo, which was really good.
Much lesser turbo lag.
Yeah, it was a good engine, though. And I drove both the CVT, which was okay.
Look, let's face it.
And the manual, which was awesome.
Let's face it. You know, the WRX is one of the most affordable, I was going to say hot hatches. It's not a hatch in this year, but one of the most affordable
entry-level cars.
Entry-level. Me and Tommy were talking about, like, what car could you buy that's fun to drive, that's not, you know, crazy expensive, and the WRX is certainly one of them.
Yeah, and I've seen WRX's trouncing vehicles costing twice the price, and some of them, when they're tastefully modded, can be absolutely monsters on track and at the same time driven every day. I have a cousin who has one of these. He's in Vegas, and he has the CVT version. I'm not going to comment on that, but he's put a lot of miles on it. He absolutely adores it. But let's move on to
the Subaru Outback wagon, which wrecked our relationship with
Subaru.
Yeah, we took it off road and scratched it a little bit. Not a lot, just a little.
I don't think it was the scratching that actually really ticked them off, because they've had other people crash their cars and they're still invited to events.
Yes, that's true, on their programs.
Yes, on their programs, actually, race program in one case.
A certain person we know who's now working for a competitor, actually.
Yeah, actually hit a wall with one of them and totaled it and is still okay, but he's handsome, we're not. So, but part of this is, the vehicle didn't do very well off-road, and one of the reasons why is the CVT just didn't perform as good as their old automatic transmissions did in the previous generation.
It just cut power. You were floored, and it wouldn't move.
Yeah, at certain angles, it just wouldn't really do it. Now, I hear that they've improved it. We don't know for sure, but what we do know is we've actually taken modern Subarus, and we have put them on Tommy's slip test, which, by the way, I still love that test, and they've done okay. This vehicle really was disappointing. And we said it was disappointing. We were being honest on camera, and Subaru went and not only took the vehicles that we had at the shop, but actually went into his garage.
Garage code. I came home. There was no car there, and I freaked out, called the police. Later did I find out that they actually came into my garage and took it without ever telling me, and they did the same thing to Andre.
So Subaru PR, unfortunately, is kind of dysfunctional.
They hate us.
Yeah, they really do.
And it's become personal.
Yeah, it has. And we're not going to go into details about things that they've done and said, but we will say this. We have driven and owned Subarus. Some of them we like, some of them we don't like, just like any other car. It's just the PR who just didn't really like what we were about because we were being honest. Let's move on
To
2016, and that is the year that we bought a legend. Yeah.
The Dodge Challenger Hellcat.
That blew my mind.
I think it blew everybody's mind. I remember when they dropped 700 horsepower into both a sedan and a two-door coupe, people were like, "What?" Literally, like,
yeah, people were falling in over.
What do you say about it? Well, how do you come, you know, and price it below, like, $100K below what a similar car with that much power,
with that type of performance,
or $200K.
I'm going to quickly tell the story, though. Yeah. So Roman and I, just before we bought this vehicle for TFL, and it became Roman's favorite. He actually did at night.
I slept on it.
We went to an event that they had. I think it was in Oregon.
Yeah, it was
at the racetrack. Yeah. And what they did was they brought in Voodoo Donuts right before the event and basically sugared and caffeined everybody up before they got into these cars. Not a great idea with a lot of journalists, but it was a hell of an event because we got a chance to go on a track, smoke the tires, and really this is right when the Hellcat came out. And we were one of the first outlets to break a Hellcat being tested when they were still calling it the Blue something. No, it was something. They had a different name, I think. Anyway, so shortly after that, Roman's like, we're getting one. That's all there is to it. We're getting one for the studio. And we did. And it was this beautiful red one with a tan interior. And it was actually a really good car. I don't think we had too many problems with
it. No, we had one problem, like the injectors failed, but it was fixed under
warranty.
I drove it to California and back. It got incredible fuel economy, high 20s.
Yeah.
Because you're just doing like 1,500 RPM at going down the highway at 75 miles an hour.
The irony about that is 70 horsepower that turns the turbo or supercharger.
And to be fair, you know, there are inherent problems with the vehicle. It overpowers the amount of tire it has. Like you're going to go sideways in any gear, pretty much.
Yep.
It just does. I found the manual to be a pain in the ass.
I love the manual, but I understand Roman's point of view.
The automatic or the manual are impossible to launch. You'll just roast the tires.
Well, we had to go in second gear whenever we launched the red one that we had, we would just sit there and roast the tires all day long.
But all that doesn't matter. And I know Europeans are like, it doesn't go around a corner. But, you know, that's not meant. It's a muscle car. You know, this is not a car that was ever meant to go around a corner.
Well, that's why they came out with the wide body versions of these cars, which does help them. Paul says they go around. Look, if Paul says it, it must be true. He said they're much better around the track, although it's still a beast. It's not a Corvette.
Let's put it this way. The top of the line Hellcat is the Demon, and that is a pure dragster.
Yeah, it's built to go straight.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
So, but it was still an incredible car. In that same year, we drove the Nissan Maxima. And I got to tell we were really disappointed because it looks like $1 million.
I love that car. The looks are great. The performance is great. And then, you know, for some reason, Nissan was wed to front-wheel drive. If they had made that rear-wheel drive, why? Why, Nissan? Why a front-wheel drive 300
horsepower? Well, all Maximas have been front-wheel drive almost their whole run. But they put the CVT in there. And it completely killed it.
Oh, I know.
The performance was... Well, let me put it to you this way. They also, around that same time, they also had the Altima with the V6. And the Altima was faster than the Maxima.
Look, you take a hot hatch and you make a front-wheel drive, it's okay. Fiesta ST, Focus ST, you can go down the line, right?
Yeah.
You know, Volkswagen, GTI, this is fine. But you take a big four-door sedan and make a front-wheel drive with the CVT, and you've just taken this wonderful engine and completely neutered it.
Yeah.
And taken all the fun out of it.
All the fun out of it. If they had left it an automatic or even a manual option, that would have been fine for me. But anyway, it was a real disappointment because it just looked so fast and it really wasn't. And that was a real shame. But I want to move on to something that you wouldn't expect to be in our favorite.
2017.
Yep,
yeah.
In 2017.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on this one because I don't like this car. But
really,
ahead.
I love it. I think it's a fantastic car.
So the car is a Chevy Bolt. I think it's – well, why don't you tell them why you love it and I'll tell them why I don't.
Okay. So as an entry-level vehicle, it absolutely trounced the Nissan Leaf in terms of range and performance.
Yes, at that time especially.
Especially at that time. I really like the one-pedal driving that one allows. Other vehicles do it as well. But, you know, I'm a guy who looks at value. If you haven't noticed, I do a lot of cheap cars on TFL, and I love doing it because I like the idea in my head of saying, I can afford that vehicle, and it's good. This vehicle was extremely affordable for an EV, one of the least expensive in its class. At the same time, it was very long range. I mean, well over 200 miles, and also on top of that, it was a hoot to drive. We actually put one up against a GTI here in Colorado, and it beat it in a drag race, which is pretty funny.
All right, let me address those issues one at a time.
Yes.
First of all, it's not affordable. Now it's affordable. Back then,
it was a little too expensive.
$38,000, Nathan, for an economy car.
My brother was able to get one for about $28,000.
Right, but I'm saying the ones I saw were $38,000 because the dealers loaded them up or GM loaded them up. So it was expensive. Secondly, when it first was unveiled and they drove it out onto the floor of the Detroit Auto Show, I thought it was a joke. I was expecting a car of the future, and basically what I got was a front-wheel drive economy car with a big-ass battery. And I was expecting, why?
The looks are subjective.
From a ground-up, you know, and Tesla was around at this point, right?
Yeah.
From a ground-up new chassis, why make a front-wheel drive? Why not make a rear-wheel drive?
It still cost a third of any Tesla you could buy at the time. you know, or even less. Once again, I'm talking value, and for a value vehicle in terms of performance. Now, one of my issues, I'll tell you my issue, and I'm sure you'll agree, it didn't have very good interior room, especially for the back seats, and the cargo area was dreadful. They've made it a little bit better recently. I haven't driven the brand new one.
Dude, I was expecting, like, you know, the one I liked much more was the Volt. I thought the Volt was actually...
The Volt was really awesome, but
well-engineered and interesting and unique, you know, parallel drivetrain, so you had the engine in parallel electric motor. You know, it had this really, really highly engineered way that the two interacted together. This thing was just...
Which, by the way, they're bargains right now. The first generation Volt
get yourself one.
Is quite good. But the Bolt is... It was good enough to where I really was shopping for one when I bought instead my Nissan Leaf, because I got a Leaf for a lot less money. I will agree with Roman. They are a little too expensive. And there were some people really did want the Jetsons, and they just got, you know, the Flintstones in terms of looks.
True. All right. Now, the worst car of that year, I think this was a swing and a miss on the part of Lincoln.
Oh, my God.
The Continental.
You know, I didn't think it looked bad, but
no,
the back seats were dreadful.
Yeah, how do you make a car that's known for being the quintessential American luxury car and give it the backseat room of, you know, a Ford Focus?
I couldn't understand why I had to lower my head, not only to get in, okay, that's understandable, but while I was in there, the headroom in the back of the Lincoln Continental was not good. And I kept thinking, am I sitting in the wrong car? It just wasn't good. The legroom was okay. It wasn't as comfortable as it should be. You're right. It's this big American luxury barge that they were bringing back.
But it wasn't.
It wasn't.
You know, and then they did this weird thing where they had these incredible engines. They had a 2.7-liter EcoBoost that was in the F-150.
That was a really good...
And they had the 3.5-liter EcoBoost that was also... And for some unbeknownst reason to me, they basically created a 3-liter EcoBoost and stuck it in this thing. I'm like, those two, the 2.7 and 3.5, the 2.7 is incredibly powerful. It's going in the new Bronco, right?
Right.
And the 3.5 is beyond incredible. Why not just take one of those? Why a 3-liter all of a sudden? Where did that come from?
So rumor has it that the 3-liter was designed specifically to be hooked up to a hybrid powertrain. I don't even know if that's for sure. But the whole thing is that Lincoln... It couldn't compete. It really couldn't. And it was disappointing. So I'm glad you agree with me on that one. The only one that competed
was that limited edition one with the suicide doors.
That was kind of cool, but it still didn't have very good backseat room. And it's just kind of disappointing. And that one of the reasons why it's gone. So let's move on to 2018. And that was kind of a magical year for Ford. So we went from a not-so-great Ford to the great Ford. Mustang GT. Which was followed by my very favorite still Mustang, which is the Bullitt, which came out a little later. But the Mustang GT back then had a lot of new components to it, independent rear end. It was so much better on the track. It was so much better to drive every day. Fantastic manual transmission. And it had line lock, which we tested on video, which is stupid
I still think it's one of the best and most fun and most value-laden American muscle cars, sports cars, whatever you want to call it. It goes around a corner. The obvious, the GT350 is much better.
Oh, well, yeah, we
the
could easily
much
go
better. Yeah. But the Ford Mustang GT, what, 450 horsepower?
Some with the Coyote V8, which is an outstanding engine.
I mean for less, this is the problem, Nathan. For less money than a Chevy Bolt. Without the federal and state discount,
without the
discount, you get, you know, a monster of a car.
Yeah, and there are other versions later on when they came out with that 4-cylinder EcoBoost. I've driven it. It's fantastic.
And it's still an incredible car.
It's a fantastic car. Yeah. It's not great for family guys, but if I were to be, you know, some strapping dude whose kids are all grown up.
It's got a back seat, Nathan.
It does have a tiny back seat. If you want a little bit of back seat space and trunk space, you would move on to the Challenger with their basic V8 models and the manual.
And you can get it as a convertible.
Yes. The Mustang GT, I think, is like one of those underrated cars, and it's still, I think, an absolute bang for the buck bargain. Even by today's standards, fantastic car. Really, really is. But we
Volkswagen Passat R-Line.
God, I was
one of the worst cars.
You know,
Volkswagen Passat is one of the best-selling cars of all time. It's like up there, top 10.
It's up there, although it's going to be taken over by Tiguan anytime. Tiguan's selling like hotcakes.
But I want to say, you know, the Passat in all its different names, right?
Yeah, all the different versions of it.
Right, yeah. It's one of the best-selling cars. But yeah, the R-Line made not a lot of sense. Once again, you know, R-Line.
Yeah.
Why not an R?
It wasn't faster. It had snazzy wheels and some stripes and an interior upgrade. And here we were kind of jonesing because at the time they had gotten rid of the Payphone, right?
Phaeton.
Like Peyton Manning. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm in Colorado. Phaeton. The whole thing is that was an incredible car with incredible engineering. And then they had the European versions of the Passat, which were fantastic. The American version of it was kind of chintzy.
I could see like Volkswagen saying, yeah, but what people want is the cool look of the fast car without paying the price for the fast car.
That's exactly the point. And that's what all these guys are doing with all of their brands. So we were really disappointed with it because we were expecting a lot more and it just fell flat. I don't want to pick on Volkswagen because they did build at this time. I mean, they still had fantastic Golfs and they had that amazing GTI. And then,
well, I don't know. I think Volkswagen built some really good cars, but they just seem to have like lost sight of where popular car buying decisions were heading, right?
I mean,
over the last 10 years, everything's gone to SUVs, and they're building Phaeton. Remember the CC?
I love the CC.
But you see, it's like you're building a car for a generation that doesn't want it anymore.
Yeah.
And the new generation wants something completely different.
Right. Well, they did knock it out of the park.
What was the convertible? That was the other one, the hardtop convertible.
Oh, the EOS?
Yeah, that's another one.
The erotic Volkswagen. It was the most effeminate vehicle on the planet.
Every Volkswagen was trying to keep up with BMW and Mercedes at the time, right? Hardtop convertibles were all the rage, so they built one. I think they sold like 10 of them.
Yeah, they
I see them on Craigslist. EOS, they're like,
I've seen them in California. But
you know when the Craigslist little description starts with like, this is the Volkswagen you want, you know? They have to define the vehicle because people don't know what it is.
I remember their commercials and they were pretty dreadful for that car at the time. But I wanted to talk about, you know, we don't have too many crossovers on this list, but I was really knocked down.
2019.
Yeah, in 2019, the Acura RDX A-Spec, when that came out.
Yeah, they kind of invented the sporty crossover in the Acura line.
But they actually, unlike everybody else, we were just talking about how our line didn't really do that much, A-Spec really did. A-Spec actually juiced this vehicle up and made it a handling giant by comparison.
Super handling all-wheel drive.
Yeah, but it was great. That vehicle was great in snow. I drove several of them. Whenever they would come in, I'd beg Roman, please let me borrow this for a couple of days, on top of doing our regular reviews.
I actually liked the previous generation RDX, the one that was like...
With the V6.
Yeah.
Yeah, I preferred the turbo. I absolutely adore it.
I think the V6 was actually quicker.
Now, the V6 would be slower compared to the brand new one, right. But that one, I think it was just a little bit quicker.
That generation
at
RDX,
sea level, it was faster.
They made it a little bit bigger.
But it handled so good, and that vehicle spoke to me. And that's why I put it on this list, because I really did think that the RDX A-Spec was one of those vehicles that actually did what it said it was going to do. It's going to be a performance vehicle version of the regular version. So that's why it's on here. But that same year, we were given something that Tommy and I are just shaking our heads still. And I think Roman might
sells.
Be too.
It sells really well.
It sells pretty
well. The Chevy
well.
Blazer.
The Chevy Blazer.
Yeah, like they took, the classic. Look, it's a fine car. It does well. There's actually versions of it that are actually pretty good off-road. But
The Blazer?
Yeah.
Well, the Trailblazer does pretty good off-road. Tommy even said
that. Yeah, that's right, but not the Blazer.
But the regular Blazer, man, that had no ground clearance.
Yeah, I mean, look what Ford did with the Bronco, which competed directly against it. And look what Chevy did with the Blazer. If I were Mary Barra, the CEO, and somebody said, hey, we got this car, we're going to call it the Blazer, I'd be like, pick any other name in the world.
No, I would have fired him. I would have fired him, and then I would have said to the person who replaces him, any other name. I had a different name. I called it the B-Laser. Because I didn't want to call it a Blazer, and a lot of you don't either, because when you say Blazer, it evokes a truck. It evokes something that can actually do a little bit of off-roading, at least. Even there, So my point is that this vehicle is really disappointing to all of us. We didn't understand what it was. Tommy, when he went to the unveiling, was asking one of the engineers, who was also doing the presentation, hey, here's some questions. And they really didn't have very good answers. And it really was a disappointing vehicle. It's perfectly fine in its own right. If you're looking for a regular crossover that actually handles quite well as like a street vehicle, it was great. But in terms of it being a Blazer by name, that was terribly disappointing.
And if I were Mary Barra, I would have said, not only don't you put the Blazer name on there, but actually build me a Blazer. And they would have done gangbusters. That they actually build a Bronco Wrangler competitor.
Exactly, because that was the opportunity, and they blew their opportunity. They had a name they could have used, and they didn't use it. And everybody's like, well, what happened? Mary Barra and everybody else will say, well, we brought out the GMC Hummer. And that will be the competitor. Well, not really. That's a whole different thing.
Look, if once you're over 100,000, you're in a different league.
You're in a different league. And on top of that, all electric. We're talking, you know, they have the technology right now to basically take a ZR2 platform, shrink it down.
You know what it's like almost, Nathan? They understood they made a mistake, right? Mm-hmm. And then they try to make up for it by going way too far in the other direction. Somebody said, you know what? We should have built this Blazer. It could be the Bronco. We can't do it. Well, let's kind of leapfrog them and let's create the Hummer EV. But the problem with the Hummer EV is it's just so obscenely expensive that I'm not saying it's not GM, but it's got to be the most expensive car GM has ever built. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah. And then focus on the fact that it is still electric and there's still a lot of people who want to buy internal combustion. Both the Jeep products and the Ford products, you could go to a gas station and fill them up, right?
You can't win with us. When they build the EV, we bitch, and then when they don't build the EV, we bitch.
Yeah, but they could have built the EV, and they could have built some sort of competitor. And quick plan, real quick, take the ZR2, the off-road version of the Chevy Colorado, which is fantastic. You and I agree.
And make it into a Blazer.
Yeah, shrink it down, throw a thing on top of there, call it Blazer, boom, done. Off-road capability, you already have the platform. Why not do this? Mary, you need to fire the person who came up with Blazer with this vehicle.
It's probably some kid fresh out of college. Yeah. All right, let's keep going. 2020, we got two more, and we're running out of time, Nathan. Kia Telluride. I would say the Kia Telluride.
They really knocked it out of the park.
Not only is it car of the year, it might be the car of the decade. They basically they hit the right car in the right segment with the right material at the right price with the right marketing. They just did everything right with that. And of course, the Palisade too, both.
Yeah, the Palisade as well. I just put the Telluride right here. But, I mean, talk about a smart decision. Exactly the opposite of the Blazer we were talking about. Very smart with the naming. Very smart with the packaging.
An X7 at two-thirds the price.
Yes, and a very, very good price. Kia has absolutely knocked it out of the park with this design. I think it's one of the most unique looking. How do you make a unique looking crossover? And a lot of them are really kind of boring. This thing looks exciting, especially when you get the top of the line package. So we have to move on kind of quick. I know we're almost out of time here.
Bad BMW 2 Series.
Yeah. You don't agree with me?
No, it depends. You know, the latest 2 Series depends. Are you talking about the one with the transverse mounted engine?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not good.
That was the first time we sampled it.
Yeah, so like 3 years ago, the M2 was incredible.
Well, that's different. I'm not talking about the M2.
That one became like the new M3. Yes, this one, I don't know what they were thinking.
They basically made a front-wheel drive BMW platform that's somewhat more affordable in a sedan, and I drove it.
I know BMW has had front-wheel drive vehicles in Europe.
Yeah, right. And they build minis.
Right, but
this just didn't feel right.
No. It, we took it around the track. Paul was like, what the hell?
He wasn't very happy with it.
No, he was not happy with it.
So summarizing 2020, I mean, it was a good year for vehicles because they had some neat stuff. But the BMW, that was right before BMW unveiled their new design ethic too, which is giant nostrils. But we won't go into that today.
All right, now 2021, the most recent, the good, you said the Ford Mustang Mach-E.
Well, wouldn't you agree? I don't like the name at all. It's another name that was just misused. But I really like the car.
We'll talk about the bad too, but it's basically Ford's version of a Tesla. And, you know, coming out of the box, if you're going to copy the market and segment leader. And they did, a good job with it.
I think they did a great job with it.
They did.
And they're selling them like hotcakes, so there's lots of
orders. It slowed down, but now with the gas prices coming back up,
it's going to accelerate once they get chips that can actually put in the vehicles. Now, the reason the bad is because I wanted to get Roman's goat because he will not stop about how wonderful Tesla is. But I want to say something about your Tesla Model Y and why I put it on bad.
Actually,
how many times does that door have to be serviced?
I know. Yeah, we can talk about the fact that. But actually, I would agree with one thing. Hmm. If you change this Y to a 3, then you may be actually onto something. Because look, the Tesla Model 3 was kind of, when it first came out, it was a darling of the Tesla lineup because it was the first one that was affordable.
Sort of affordable.
There was a performance version, right, that was extremely quick.
Yeah.
Like 0 to 60 in the 3-second range. You know, we were talking about the GTR. Now the Tesla Model 3 could do that.
Yeah. It was extraordinarily fast. And Tommy actually managed to redesign the rear end of one.
Yes, he did. Fantastic. But the problem with the 3, once again, it was like, you know, in a world of SUVs, they built a sedan. And there was no other choice except for the X, and the X was much more expensive and, you know, 3-row, blah,
massive,
blah, blah.
Massive by comparison.
But what they did right, I think, was they finally took everything that was wrong with the 3 and they fixed it in the Y. So Y's taller, both, you know, ground clearance. Yeah. So now you can get in and out of it. It's got a boatload of room behind the rear seats. Mm-hmm. It's also much more practical in a lot of ways. So you can actually fit like four people into it comfortably. I think the Model 3, when it came out, was very popular. But now I think, you know, everybody's going for the Y. And I think the Y is actually, there are issues. Tesla is still struggling to build cars.
Yeah, quality is a real, and that's my big beef with them.
Yeah, quality is an issue. But in terms of kind of the quintessential electric car, everybody's playing catch up to them, right? So,
yeah.
So you know, Ford Mach-E, Volkswagen ID4, Polestar, and, you know, the slew of other ones that are coming.
The Mercedes and all those other ones that are
coming. They're all gunning after the Model 1.
And I agree that they're gunning after Tesla. And Tesla has a lot of really good tech, but I am livid about their lack of build quality. Some of the stuff I've seen is just ridiculous for the price.
And the panel gaps in ours are getting worse. Yeah. I walk by it. And I look at it, and I'm like, that little flap where the, you know, power
goes,
it doesn't shut all the way now. I mean, they're getting worse. I'm like, it's actually worse, and it was pretty atrocious to begin with.
Right. Now, hopefully, they'll be able to improve these things with their next generation of vehicles. But remember, Tesla doesn't technically have years, so.
But the powertrain has been rock solid.
The powertrain is quite good.
And the heater did stop working when we were up in Loveland Pass in the middle of winter. That's kind of an issue when you have no heat.
How much did you pay for that vehicle?
$64,000
for an affordable vehicle. See, and that's my other reason. I still think that now that supposedly
it is a performance.
But still, even their base models are really expensive and just out of the reach of regular Joes, which is going back to the Chevy Bolt.
But they're holding their value, Nathan. If you
they
look
do
at
hold their value, I'm not going to argue with that. And you know, we've done used ones and new ones with them. And one final thing about the Y is that I know you are enthralled with it. I really don't like the way it looks. I think it's okay.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think the 3 is a much better looking vehicle,
I think,
aesthetically.
I think if I put on those big wheels that came with it and tires, then it looks good. Right now I've got the winter tires, and it looks kind of silly. But with the fat rubber, it looks better. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the nose on the thing is
one of my issues. The nose is weird.
Yeah, it is weird. From the back, it looks much better. Like the side three-quarter rear profile is good.
You sound the front, like you're talking about my prom date.
The front is not so good.
Exactly.
And the interior, and the other, you know, there's a lot of things you could ding Tesla on. I'm really getting sick of like the four colors they have.
Yeah.
Right? You see a Tesla, it's either red, blue, white.
From the factory, or silver or whatever. But
and the interior, you have
everybody's wrapping them, and for good reason, because they're sick and tired of the fact that there is no, the color palette
sucks. You don't have to have like the amount of choice you have in like an F-150, right? Where you
50 different things.
But it would be nice to have, you know. Like, you know, so when, especially in places like Boulder, and I suspect San Francisco, and, you know, probably LA, in some places, like when you park at the grocery store, you can at least tell which one is yours from the four others.
God, can you imagine doing that in the Bay Area? And you just like 50 of them look like yours. Anyway, guys, that's our list. I know you guys agree and disagree with some of our choices. Now, bear in mind, these are based on vehicles that we've driven. Most of these, like 90% of them, there are videos out there. And I highly recommend you check them out. You know, see what you think and comment and let us know what you think about our list. And should Roman come up with his own list?
And if you're listening to this all the way to the end, keep in mind that our new auction site, TFL Bids, has our long-term Raptor on it. We're selling a Raptor.
Yeah, that's right. The Raptor is up for sale. And you can find information about that Raptor on tfltruck.com. Remember, the website is tflbids.com. And there are a lot of other vehicles there. But yes,
you know what else is there? A TRX.
The TRX is on it, too?
Yeah, a TRX with 16 miles.
16 miles. That's not ours.
No, that's not ours.
I was going to say it was 16.
Ours has 6,000, but 16 miles. So if you want a TRX,
basically pristine and new.
Yeah, 16 miles, brand new. So, or you can get our Raptor, which is, you know, 6,000 miles, 2020, every option, also pretty pristine and new.
Yeah, and the good news is we have a chip inside of it.
We have all the chips, yeah.
All the chips are there.
We have both keys and all the chips.
That's right. Thank you guys for joining
us. A bunch of potato chips, I was eating them.
See, we used to not be allowed to eat anything in these things. Things have changed.
All right, once again, thanks for watching. And remember, start your day, Nathan, the TFL way.
Start your day with the TFL way.
No, just start your day the TFL
way. In the TFL way.
No, the TFL way.
I like mine better.
By watching a TFL video.
Okay, guys. You take care. We'll see you later.
Ciao.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega
megastores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.